Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We are talking about a book called The Might of Thought. It's known as Macht der Gedanken, and it's a very important book written by a man named Edward Albert Meyer, Billy Meyer, an 80-year-old man who lives in Switzerland today, in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti. He's written something like 50-plus books, which I think are the most profound source of wisdom on the planet, particularly spiritual wisdom. And we are in this book called The Might of Thoughts, and we are learning about something called ideas and ideals. An idea is an IDEA, and these are incompletely developed factors which must first be thoroughly contemplated and worked through in order to recognize and correspondingly handle the values and the unvalues in them. Boy, that was an interesting little phrase there, the values and unvalues in them. So our incomplete, undeveloped ideas have things of value in them and some unvalues. Now, what is an unvalue? It's a question I had to ask myself today when I was looking at this. And I came first kind of around the corner because I looked up something called a devolutive attitude. Later on in that same page, it talks about what a devolutive attitude is. And this, about the best definition I can give you, is that this attitude, this devolutive attitude, is an attitude that is incorrect with its regard to evolution. So it's said to be devolutive. And the word devolutive is used when referring to the incorrect peace sign on the earth. We have a peace sign that's been turned upside down. And the so-called peace symbol refers to a kind of senseless death. And you may have heard me use this concept before. I see the earth as the planet of unnecessary death. If you travel on the roads from my home, which is about an hour away from Columbus, into Columbus, you're going to see a lot of unnecessary death, senseless death, in terms of many different animals killed on the side of the road: deer, raccoon, possum, squirrels, cats. It's a sad state of affairs, and we live truly in a planet governed by the upside down peace symbol, which is basically telling us senseless death. This is de-evolutionary death. It refers to a non-evolutionary senselessness and something called a forced finiteness, which I don't know what that's all about yet. Another study for another day. One, in contrast to devolutive Einstellung in the German, we have an evolutive Einstellung, or an evolutive attitude. And we create an evolutive attitude, and when we start to conform to that evolutive attitude, if you study this book long enough, I'm sure you've started to develop an evolutive attitude. In Contact Report 10, the famous spiritual teaching, contact report between Semyase and Billy, It says, through this cognition, his attitude becomes a sanctuary, and all things with him become holy, even the earth under his feet. So when you start to develop an evolutive attitude, this attitude is a sanctuary for you. It takes care of you. And we are told to recognize the values in the and the unvalues in our ideas. And that's IDEAS as opposed to IDEAL. Remember, the ideas are incomplete, undeveloped concepts that have both values and unvalues in them. So perhaps we must remove the unvalues from our ideas in order to turn them into ideals with an L. Because an ideal can eventually be used in a life determination or a zeal, as they're called. I think an unvalue is something negative that over time we have become to value. And I think we all do this, unfortunately. It's a negative thought pattern that we've started to value. And some of these unvalues can require months or even years to change for the better. So our unvalues are related to our character pattern, and they can be psychopathic in nature. Let me give some examples of unvalues that are discussed in Figu Bulletin 68, where Patah is talking to Billy. So, for example, the lack of ability to have deep feelings for others could be considered an unvalue. Unvalues that are characteristic of psychopaths, which is what we're talking about here, one is angriness. A lack of logical decisions is another psychopathic unvalue. A lack of rational conduct. The frequent change of sexual partner. And these are just some of them that I'm pulling out of here. There's many, many of these. Boredom, parasitism. I thought boredom was really interesting for the unvalue of a psychopath. Manipulative behavior with regard to fellow human beings. That's very obvious of the psychopath, if you've ever been around a person of that nature. Dazzling, i.e. seducing and deluding of fellow human beings. A sense of unfairness. The psychopath is kind of obsessed with unfairness. Endorsement of torture, the hate mentality. No remorse. A psychopath has no remorse. And that's a scary thing to see in somebody if you've never seen it before. However, he or she is only able to do this because he or she has created an evolutive attitude whereby he or she conforms. So we must learn to conform to the evolutive attitude. So where does all this come from? Well, we're studying a book called The Might of Thoughts, which is written by Edward Albert Meyer. Edward Albert Meyer is known as Beam. And his real name is Edward, which means the guardian of the treasure. He's known to the rest of the world as Billy or Bean. And he had extraterrestrial contacts and still has extraterrestrial contacts. And he has been told to establish himself in the background because we, the human beings of Earth, we create idols for ourselves. His first extraterrestrial mentor, Svoth, told him not to go into the public too much, to remain in the background, performing his mission in a written form. And eventually, this information that we're studying is slowly, like a snowball rolling down a big mountain, very slowly, very small at first. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And the spiritual teaching is said to eventually awaken the human race on Earth out of their sleep, and is supposed to become a worldwide movement, which will bring peace, love, and freedom to the human beings of the Earth. Billy was told by Svoth many things that would happen in the future, And one of these things was the transformation of the earth through the spiritual teachings. And Billy was also told by his first extraterrestrial mentor that he would lose his left arm in an accident, which came true. He was told that there would be attempts on his life, which was true. He was told that even his wife would turn against him. Sfath also taught Billy something called spiritual telepathy, which enabled Billy to pull down information from what's called a spiritual plane. There are 7 of these spiritual planes that are the final destination, or the final stage of evolution of human beings, I should say. And Billy was told that our time would be a epic of great destruction, great annihilation. And this epic would start with the criminal contact of the Americans, who would drop the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But on the flip side, on the good side of this, the spiritual teaching is eventually supposed to clarify and raise the entire humanity of the earth. And that's why we're taking the time to look at the information in these books in such detail. And it's quite eye-opening as you do that. You realize how little you knew, how little you understood, and you keep pulling back many, many, many layers of this onion, and there seems to be no end to it. And it also breaks down certain processes, wrong thought processes that you've had in your mind for quite some time. Now, here is some more way out information, so bear with me a little bit. So the Meyer material says we all have a part of us that doesn't die, that lives forever. And they refer to it as the spirit form. And you really can't make a true location for the spirit form. But the Meyer information says it's basically in the center of our middle brain in an area called the superior colliculus. Well, Billy's spirit form is very ancient, 9.6 billion years old, many, many, many times older than the spirit forms of the people on the earth. His first incarnation, I believe his first, was as a man named Nokodamian. And Nokodamian lived on other worlds in the Lyra and Vega star systems before that spirit form came to the earth. And that spirit form of Nokodamian came out of these high-level spiritual planes, one of which is called Arahat Athrasata. And this spirit form came out of the spiritual plane for the sake of his people who weren't following what's called the creational laws and commandments. And he wanted to bring his people reason and rationality. So Nokodamian, again, is the first incarnated personality of the same spirit form that currently inhabits Edward Albert Meyer. We all have a spirit form. It's a part of us that never dies. It's called our innermost creational personality. It will even let you know if your thinking is right or wrong, if you've learned to pay attention to it. It never sleeps. It never dies. It's continually recording everything that you do. And the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer, Nokodamian, is sometimes... His spirit form is said to be the creation of the planet Sadar. So Edward Albert Meyer, his spirit form, didn't originate on the Earth. So I wonder if our spirit forms are in some way related to the planet of our origination. But the main thing I want to get through here is that the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer is referred to sometimes as the universal prophet. In other words, it incarnates on planets to help speed up the evolution. And he did this millions of years ago on planets in the Lyra and Vega star systems. And he's doing it on Earth now. Now, I say he, this is a line, a lineage You've had many, many previous lives, as I have. In many of those previous lives, you were different. You had different personalities than you do now. So it's kind of a lineage when you think of a personality. So Nicodemus was trying to bring rationality and reason to his people millions of years ago on planets in the Lyra and Vega star systems. And these, our universe is a little more complicated than our scientists realize, because as the Meyer information says, we have different space-time configurations. If you would look at our universe, it's roughly egg-shaped, and it has seven different layers. And in the fourth layer of our universe, it's called the material belt, and that's where the stars and the galaxies reside. And there are, within that fourth layer, seven subdivisions of seven different space-time configurations. So you can think of them as dimensions. So, when I say Nicodemus was in the Lyra and Vega star system, he was in an older space-time configuration than we here are on here at Earth. And he came back into the physical to bring rationality and reason to his people. Let me continue in this book here. It says, because only rationality and virtuelessness, irrationality and virtuelessness govern in highly emotional forms, for which truthfully settings of a zeal and an imagination and realization of a zeal are foreign. So when you have these incomplete ideas flying around in your mind, these tend to tangle up your thoughts, and they tend to go towards emotional outbursts. Now you'll notice you cannot really set a true life determination, an evolutive target for yourself when you're in this state of mind. In fact, it's called the following of ideas versus ideal with an L. The following of ideas occurs from which a setting of the zeal, a life determination, can never result in any wise, because idea aligns without being able to be made into an ideal. So we have two things, an idea, I-D-E-A, and an ideal, I-D-E-A-L. We want to take our I-D-E-A's, think them through completely and thoroughly, and then they become an I-D-E-A-L, which eventually can help us reach our targets, our life determinations. If we are dominated by unripe, incomplete ideas, then rationality is squeezed out of our mind and we cannot function towards the life determination, the target. I don't want to say goal, because the Figu people say the goal is not the right translation there. So remember, the zeal is related to our evolvement. An idea must be made into an ideal. Now, if you follow your ideas, you can become a murderer or a despot. Because a murderer or a tyrannical leader, a despot, only pursues his unripe ideas, from which she or he is never able to make an ideal. That is to say, a healthy, positive determination, because you remain caught up. Somehow, these ideas, which have unvalues in them, we have a hard time freeing ourselves from them. They kind of cause us to rotate in our thinking. And I don't know if I can. Yeah, maybe I did find it. Here's something similar to what I'm talking about. It says, page 224 in the Might of Thoughts, however, he or she is only able to do this because he or she has created an evolutive attitude to which he or she conforms. So once you develop an evolutive attitude, you can start to look into your own thoughts, analyze your ideas, and say, hey, that idea has an unvalue in it, something that needs to be yanked out. It's no good. But the unrighteous human being has created a devolutive attitude. So if you've got the wrong attitude, you won't do this. Whereby he or she panders to virtuelessness and to that which is unrighteous. One of the things we have to develop to be able to continue to progress and evolve our consciousness is persistence and perseverance. So we need to develop this. The whole process of thinking, the inner persistence, is of particular significance, which is why it is absolutely necessary that it be created. The persistence created by the consciousness is actually an essential quality which must first be created by the human being. So the purpose of this book is to teach us to think in a neutral, positive way. Not real positive and not real negative. More oriented towards a neutral state, slightly to the positive. And when you do that, you're going to have persistence and perseverance and confidence and optimism. You'll be relaxed. You'll be cheerful. You'll be satisfied. You'll have hope. So we're taught by the Might of Thoughts book that our neutral positive thoughts produce good feelings. See, the feelings rise out of the thoughts. And the feelings are different than our emotions. Our emotions are explosive. The emotions can damage the psyche. They disturb the psyche. And if you run on emotions, it will create like deep grooves in your psyche, deep grooves in your thought processes, in your consciousness, that you'll keep repeating and you'll rotate these thoughts. It's a very dangerous thing. It can even negatively affect your health. Let me read this. It says, rather solely with a senseless rotation of the thoughts around some sort of nonsensical idea, which are then realized as a result of the endless rotation of the thoughts, because also these develop might. However, they cause harm with it, whereby not just the psyche, rather the whole life can be destroyed. So we have to constantly analyze our thoughts, and we need to be looking at how our thoughts are making us feel. That's always what I find to be true, is that if you're having thoughts and they're compulsive and you're not really, you don't know if they're negative or positive, you're just having these thoughts. Well, look into your feelings. How do they make you feel? Do you feel uncomfortable a little bit? Are you a little bit disturbed by these feelings? Then you may be having thoughts that are not neutral positive. And that's when you have to start analyzing your thoughts and then looking at the unvalues in your thoughts and getting rid of those thoughts. Our thoughts are supposed to be like a garden, a beautiful garden that is filled with all kinds of living, healthy things. A unvalue, a negative thought, or a thought that's way too positive, that's just not realistic, that's also like a weed in our garden. So we need to pull out those negative thoughts. Mostly, I would say you're going to be nailed by negative thoughts. That's what most people have to fight against. And they tend to rotate, repeat, rotate. Your whole thoughts becomes like a galaxy. It's rotating around this center item. And this center item is something you feel really strongly about. And you may have to let it go because it might have an unvalue in it. something false, something destructive, a devolutive attitude, something that you need to throw out. It could be a weed in your consciousness garden that you need to get rid of. So these are negative thought patterns that we're trying to get rid of. And this requires you to not allow your thoughts to drift. And the way that Billy put that, he says, do not allow your thoughts to drift. Take a hold of the steering wheel like a captain steers a ship and steer your thoughts, nurture your thoughts, strengthen your good, healthy thinking so that you will have good and healthy feelings, and your good and healthy feelings will spawn more healthy thoughts, and your healthy feelings and thoughts will eventually produce habits, good habits, and the good habits will eventually manifest into good circumstances in your life. So your good thoughts will bring about good circumstances. Your negative thoughts will bring about negative circumstances in your life. Your overly positive thoughts, ridiculously positive thoughts, will also bring negative circumstances in your life. So we're looking for neutral positive thoughts on a continuous basis. And you have to recognize when a negative thought pattern comes in that it is something that needs to be neutralized. There's a lot of negative things you can focus on, and it's dangerous to focus on these negative things. Don't focus on them. Pull your thoughts away from the negative things. When you're thinking negative thoughts, you will notice you will get tangled ideas. Your thoughts will be confused. You will abruptly go from one extreme to another. And these come from what the Meyer Information calls an idea, which is an incomplete, undeveloped, unright thing. However, the ideal with an L is completely developed and thought through. We're encouraged to totally develop and think through our ideas so that they can become mature, completely developed ideals. Now, we all have within us something called the life power, or the Lebenskraft in the German, which is actually, and this blew my mind, I had an issue with this for a couple of weeks trying to wrap my mind around this. The source of our life power is created by ourself. It lies in our consciousness, in our thoughts. And these thoughts must be formed, tended, and nurtured so that they correspond to an intention, an ideal. Now, I must say that when I first read that the life power must be created by ourselves, I was a bit disturbed. I was thinking, how can I possibly create life power? In fact, I probably took a couple of weeks to really think about this. And what I realized is that there are thoughts that I have that do invigorate me. Some thoughts do give me strength and energy, and I noticed that these thoughts come when I'm doing certain things, so I started to try to get back to doing those things which have these thoughts which generate energy, strength and energy. Other thoughts seem to drain me of energy. Maybe this is what Billy's writing about. And I've noticed that exercise is something that really helps me strengthen my Lebenskraft, my life power. So we have a spirit form in the upper part of our middle brain in an area called the superior colliculus. And the spirit form is the part of us that never dies. It lasts between lifetimes. It gives you feedback, literally. If your thoughts, your consciousness is thinking wrongly, and usually that feedback will come through your feelings. But not always. I mean, you have to really be sensitive. You have to look inward. You have to analyze yourself. You need to master techniques related to concentration. You need to be able to even try to look into your subconscious and learn how your unconscious works. Because much of the power of our thinking is in the unconscious. And if you look at the tree of life symbol and the Meyer material, it always flows upward. This is communicating to your unconscious, to your subconscious. The unconscious is where the great power is. And in Contact Report 39, it tells us that our mental forces have the power to influence other people's life forces. We can influence our own. So this is very amazing, because when the Pleiaren were on the earth, when we had the interaction with them, we also had the 1,000-year lifespan. But the Meyer information explains that our religions, in many ways, have weakened our life power, weakened our lifespan. So now we have these very short lifespans. Part of this is also due to a genetic manipulation that's been done to the people of the earth. I wanted to shift gears slightly and talk about the universe again. The creational natural laws I wanted to talk about. The universe, or the universal consciousness. The Meyer material sometimes will just use the word creation. They don't think that there's a personification. There is no personification like a Heavenly Father, they say. The universe has an intelligence behind it. Schöpfung is the German word for creation. The universe, the physical universe that we live in, is the material manifestation of the wisdom of creation, of the universal consciousness. You could think of the universe as the creation's internal and external body. And everything in this whole universe is the manifestation and the might of the love of that universal consciousness. And all of the physical universe, again, resides in this fourth layer of these seven counter-rotating layers. And the first law, the first creational natural law, is love. And the highest form of love that the Meyer material talks about is called effective love. And effective love is a love that's based on reverence. We are told to have reverence for each other. This is a respect. We are supposed to have a great love, and this love is not romantic. It is, how does it say, the creation's love, it explains, is its love is the highest principle in all creation, and through it everything exists in absolute logic. No life is able to exist without love, without the light of truth. And no light is able to exist without love and truth, and no truth is able to exist without light and love. True love is true being, and it's the everlasting warmth which comes from the center of creation. So if you looked at our universe, I guess at the very center of it is this everlasting warmth. And love is considered the highest principle in creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. Now, I wanted to talk about this absolute logic related to the love of creation. If you have true love, It's logical. It's rational. It's dependable. It behaves in a predictable, rational way. It treats one object of love well. It treats the second object of love well as well. The love of creation is said to be everywhere. Nothing would exist if there was not the love of creation. And we would not exist. You and I would not exist if it were not for the love of creation. And I exist because of the love of creation. So creation, when it creates things in logic and love as well. Every tiny animal, every tiny plant fulfills its purpose in love. Even with the prey relationship where the predator eats the prey, that is an automatic function of creation. It might indicate that creation is still evolving. You know, this is one of the fundamental differences in the Meyer information than, say, organized religion, which says there's this perfect creator. It's like a heavenly father which rescues you and does all this. Things. The Meyer information says the universal intelligence, the spiritual energy, is evolving, and it's not anywhere near perfection in the sense of it has many, many stages to go, many eons of time that we cannot even imagine of continued evolution. In fact, the creation of your spirit form in your current life is part of the evolutionary process of the universe. You are needed to help the universe evolve. We're boots on the ground. I've heard people say it that way. Your spirit form will live many, many, many material lifetimes to gather wisdom, which eventually if you're climbing a ladder of evolution, and there are seven steps on this ladder. And right now the people of the earth are mostly on step number two. The first step is primitive, the second step is rational. We're still struggling with being rational. We're in some cases not doing very well. But we're slowly evolving. And one of the best ways to understand this evolutionary process is to realize that love is the highest principle of creation, and through it everything exists in absolute logic. The creation, the universal conscious, created everything in love and logic, and it put that same love in all of its creatures. So that life itself is love. Even if living in the world seems to consist of conflict and drudgery, this is part of our striving. You see, the second creational natural law is striving. We have to continue to work. We have to continue to strive. And if you're not striving, you won't have happiness. Striving, and one of the keys to striving is to not go any farther than the step in front of you. In other words, if you have a thing you want to accomplish, don't think about, this difficult trauma I must go through. Only think of the next step in front of you. And if after three steps you decide to stop for a while or whatever, or quit for today and resume for tomorrow, don't worry about it and don't beat yourself up about it. But you're going to make the first step, and then if you feel like you can, you make the next and the third step. And this is the nature of striving, because striving creates the life. And without striving, you will have affliction. If you inhibit the striving in your life, if you become lazy or whatever, you will bring stagnation and hopelessness to you. That's why the Meyer information says look for the source of the life power and develop it. Look for that area of your consciousness, what thoughts you have that strengthen your life power. Because when your life power is strengthened, you will be more likely to strive. And that sense of stagnation will go away, the grief will go away, the confusion, your sense of disharmony will go away. Some people carry resentment. You know, a lack of striving can bring resentment and lies and self-deceit. Man, get to work. If nothing else, for your own peace of mind. And your work might be sweeping the sidewalk. It might be cleaning your garage. It isn't always this tremendous purpose. It's sometimes just washing the dishes. But if you do not do these things, you will have grief, confusion, joylessness, disharmony. Now, I wish I'd have known this 10 years ago. I wish I'd have known this 20 years ago. The people, through their own correct intuitions, follow these creational natural laws and they don't realize it. So the first creational natural law is love. The second creational natural law is striving. Continued work, and I would like to continue to study the whole concept of striving. It's so critical to understand this, but I want to get back to the first creational natural law. So the first creational natural law is the law of love. It's a love based on reverence. It's not romantic. It's effective. It's logical. It's stable. If your life has become a heavy, tough battle, it's because you're not striving or you've turned away from creation and you've lost the knowledge of its existence and you're no longer operating in love. But the creation lets its love become apparent through its creations. You have to be willing to see and recognize this love. What does it say? The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. Creation doesn't have a personality. Whoa, think about that. That'll floor you for a couple weeks, or a couple months, or a couple years as you try to understand that. Because we only understand a personality because we are personality. But the creation is something that's called a Wesenheit in German. It is this neutral, positive juggernaut that 24/7 for hundreds of trillions of years is expanding every day without a rest for 155 trillion years. It's evolving, it's expanding, and then it goes into its contraction phase. But can you imagine if you had to have a personality and tried to do that? You couldn't, you know. So creation is fundamentally different than you or I. It's not a Heavenly Father. It doesn't rescue you because it knows you're going to reincarnate for millions of years. And if you decide during this lifetime to be stupid and to walk off the ledge, you're going to just cause and effect. Gravity's going to take you down. And you're going to hit the bottom, and it's going to be nasty. And your spirit form is going to pop out of your body, and it's going to take your consciousness with it to this spirit realm, which is basically in the same, it's kind of an energy layer around our planet. It's the only way I can really think of it. And it takes your consciousness from your previous life and it puts it in like a storage bank called the overall consciousness block. And it starts to process everything that you learned and everything you did in the previous life. And it breaks these things down into their evolutive essence, like what you learned about logic and reasonableness and fairness and love and confidence and cheerfulness. And all these different evolutive values are then created. And then the spirit form, the Geist form, which is the real you, which is your innermost creation of personality, will absorb these values and become more knowledgeable and more strengthened because of it. And the Meyer information says that the people on Earth are about 4.5, if I remember the number correctly, 4.5 million years old in terms of our spirit forms. We've been reincarnating. And yes, typically your memories are blocked, so you don't remember all these previous lifetimes, because my goodness, how confusing. The difficulties of 4.5 million years of reincarnating could be, you would probably give up because you would think about everything you've been through and say, the hell with it. I'm not doing this anymore. It's too difficult. But so creation creates this block so that we typically cannot remember. And until later, until much, much later in our evolutionary climbs, you see we're on the second step of that ladder, but once we get up to the step number 5, I believe it's called the age of recognitions, where we start to have the ability to remember our previous lives. And it takes a lot of evolution to be able to do that. I'm glad I don't have to think about all the people you've seen die and animals you've lost and pets that you've lost and all the difficulties you went through, and you don't want to remember all those things. So focus on this lifetime. And remember, every smallest plant, every so tiny animal was created in love by creation. Each creation existing according to the same law of love. All life is in the absolute perfection that it should be through the love of creation, except for humans. You see, we go outside creation's plan. No other animals or plants do that. Every life form lives exactly by creation's plan, and only humans can turn away from love. And we must learn again what true love is. The infinite love of creation, it connects all life, because in all life, this love lies hidden. If you've ever seen the love of a puppy or a kitten, you will recognize that. All of nature and its indescribable, its splendor, is nothing but the love of creation expressed visibly. And these laws are wonderfully arranged, and people everywhere come up against the radiating love of creation. But we close our senses off. So once you close your senses off, you don't feel the love of creation. And that feeling I'm talking about is the German word empfinden. It's this fine sensitive feeling. We turn that off because we feel hurt from many different things, and we can close off our senses. And then we tell ourselves there's no love in the world. But creation has formed and arranged everything so wonderfully, so people can recognize the majestic love of creation at every moment, if we had the inkling to do so. We could recognize the incredible radiating love of creation. If we contemplate nature, then we can feel the love of creation. And we can start to feel our own love. But this is hard for people who many years have felt differently. The way to sense the love of creation is primarily through your thinking, because thinking influences the feeling. Remember, the feelings come out of the thoughts. Remember, I was talking earlier in the Might of Thoughts book about how the feelings come out of the thoughts. For example, you should be able to really appreciate things like trees. And you should be able to recognize that a tree is the product of creation's love. Trees are magnificent things. And the forces of nature come from creation. And people think that appreciating nature is kind of ridiculous sometimes. But they do not understand anymore. They've closed their senses off. The longer, the more these thoughts affect love feelings and the spiritual finds sensitive feelings, the infinding. And thus, in turn, we'll feel this bond with all life, so much that a simple blade of grass, a bird, or a shrub, or some other living creature, you will be able to sense, is driven by the same love to fulfill its purpose and creation's plan, as humans should also do, as we should be doing since a long time ago. So we carry a fragment of creation within us. That is our spirit form. Therefore, the love of creation is within us. And the more respectfully the love of creation is perceived, the stronger becomes the person. Suddenly, love is no longer an insincere thing. Suddenly, it's something that we're not longingly hoping for. But this fine sensitive feeling is the result of your own mental effort. Amazing. This is amazing writing that Billy has written. So satisfying and energizing is this love. It permeates the whole person. And once extensively making progress, the person will take it on willingly to work on himself, namely to maintain this love, to extend it and to nurture it. Remember, the Might of Thought says we should nurture our thoughts, strengthen them, clarify them, for himself but also for creation. The love is not unfathomably deep. It is an immense power which never slept. It's been active since ancient times. It's immeasurably abundant and logically, remember, love is the highest principle in creation, and through it everything exists in absolute logic. Love flourishes splendidly in all beings and animals and flowers and the fields and humans and words, and also in singing. Forever it will permeate the world. Love will continuously be the purpose of all existence and all timely in its given logic. And there it's so interesting. We do not think of love and logic together. But Edward Albert Meyer points that out to us. So that is the love of creation. I wanted to maybe just close out the show, since I think we got about 8 minutes left here or so, 7 minutes left. And this is going to be rather upsetting for the religious folks that may be listening or may listen to this archive lately. It has to do with God and the concept of God. And how it, in many ways it's incorrect. Let me just read here. Thus they also determine their own life, their path, their destiny, and their health, and all their ups and downs in the course of the entire lifespan. In other words, that's what we do through our thinking. For this, only his or her thinking and his or her will are required, and the cognition that the human being, him or herself, is God, meaning that you are responsible for your own life, through your own thoughts, through your own activities. When the human body dies, then the spirit dwelling within discards it like it's an old coat. Think about that. That's humbling. But the spirit does not die with the body. It only escapes from it in order to continue to live and continue to function. The spirit form and its thinking and activity form the so-called eternal spirit. This never dies and will always live. Different, however, than what the Christian religion teaches, and also different from what many other religions teach. There are very many fixed laws which rule the micro and the macrocosmos of the universe, as well as the spirit and its unstoppable further development, up to its inevitable, absolutely full development, an absolute development which however, looks entirely different from what the religions preach. What sense would it be the life and the spirit of the human being have if he or she would only live 50 or 70 years in order to then disappear into the other world and to rot until judgment day? It would make no sense. A sense of the life is then only found when one recognizes the continuous spiritual and consciousness-based further development, and with it the connected periods of life. But this cognition follows first after a preceding and corresponding thinking process. However, if the process has taken place and the human being has achieved the necessary cognition through it, then he or she recognizes him or herself. They recognize that they themselves are God. In other words, you are responsible for yourself. The creation is not a heavenly father. It's not going to rescue you. If you make a bad decision, there's an effect associated with that bad decision. Therefore, they must fight and heal all the terrible things within themselves. So we must fight to correct our unvalues. Remember I was talking about the unvalues earlier? Like angriness is an unvalue. Inability to have a deep feeling for another person, that's an unvalue. All those, the list of unvalues that we were talking about before, I don't know if I have them in front of me or not at the moment. I don't. But those unvalues are the things that we need to fix in ourselves. Boredom. Lack of logical decisions. Because only through this can the human being be built up into a genuine human being. The terrible things in the human beings are great. These are the unvalues. The greatest are those of his or her thinking. They make one ill. Your unvalues can make you ill. Your incorrect thinking can make you ill. They destroy and annihilate. They even can drive you to suicide. So your unbalanced thinking can drive you to suicide. These disastrous things are all based on a psychic origin, and they only lead back to the form of thinking and feeling. To that form of the thinking which drives the human being into self-destruction. So these unvalues, this hate mentality, remorselessness, the frequent change of sexual partners, a lot of these things, they can drive us into self-destruction. The negative thinking. Thinking is a tremendous power which forms the human being into exactly what he or she thinks. Tension, jealousy, pathological craving for revenge, vexation, hatred, hollowness, avariciousness, seeking to criticize, in bitterness, strife. It goes on and on and on. All of these thoughts, which are not neutral positive, eventually lead to self-destruction. They have a negative effect on our bodies and our health. In any case, I hope you've enjoyed the show. I've certainly enjoyed and learned a lot bringing it to you today. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we've been studying the book, The Psyche, the book, The Way to Live, and the book, The Might of Thoughts, all written by Edward Albert Meyer, an 80-year-old man in Switzerland. We'll see you soon. Have a great day. And use your free will and control your thoughts. We'll talk to you again soon.